The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, from now till 12, we'll do the Friday Forum as usual on the PK Show. I've been in for Pat this week, and it's a great pleasure to welcome an all-star, all-female panel. Beside me on my right here is Sinead Carroll, well-known editor of the journal.ie, representing Fianna Fáil and the government, Senator Clifford Lee, Lorraine Clifford Lee, of course, representing the Dublin Fingal constituency and lots more. We're also joined by Deputy Jennifer Whitmore of the Social Democrats, elected and re-elected for the Wicklow constituency. And I left the jawbreaker. I call her just Gabby. Gabby Gatavechka, or something like that. But she is the legend of a political correspondent with the Irish Independent, who has to put up with me today. So we want to focus, first of all, a little bit of detail on this EU two-day summit. And it does strike me that there's something different happening here. So the total EU budget is 2 billion a year. And they've announced 2 weeks ago, and they're going to ratify it today, 800 billion just to be spent on upgraded defence. And so therefore, the world is in a different place. Can Ireland stay in the same place? And we just want to drill into that of what is the most appropriate Irish response. And earlier in the week, we actually covered an item. Professor Patrick Bryery, who was talking about 2029 and the type of threats that we could face in relation to defending Ireland.
If we're going to remain a credible, neutral nation and to preserve our neutrality, we're going to have to invest quicker and more in our defence.
Sinead, what's, you know, the talks of option three, 3 billion on defence. What do you think needs to be done here?
Well, one of the biggest risks that we have is undersea cables and our infrastructure and making sure that we can defend ourselves. Even earlier this year, the government, the state ran a tabletop exercise to see what would happen if the country lost its internet access, because that's a risk that we have to plan for if there's a complete blackout of internet, if something happens to the undersea structures. So there's a whole question around neutrality. So when you start talking about defence spending, you start talking about ideology and where money should be going. But there's also the pragmatism question of how do we defend some of our infrastructure. So there's kind of two things that are going to be at play when we're talking about this money. And that's why it's a really complex, difficult thing to find it, to figure out how much is enough and how do we make sure that it's going to the right things and not just funding armaments around the world being made to kill people in other places in the world.
So, I mean, as of now, we'll take any type of undersea attack. So we've got both on the East Coast and the West Coast energy connectors. We've electricity connectors. We've gas pipelines to Scotland. And we have these transatlantic cybersecurity internet systems and online systems. How should we defend it?
Well, we need to have a presence, and at the moment the presence we have, so like we had a story just this week about a Russian linked ship spotted by Irish military dropping an anchor near our infrastructure, our undersea infrastructure. Now, so the army did see that, the navy did see it, they were able to video what happened, the anchor was dropped, and they communicated with the ship, and the Russian linked ship headed off. It was spotted in other waters.
If you drop an anchor and troll it along,
it can damage.
It can rip out somebody's.
It can damage either. So they weren't sure if it was the incident was bad seamanship or if it was something more nefarious than that. So and these kind of things. But we have to be able to know what's happening. So there has to be a presence there. And we need to be able to action things if something is happening, if it's bad seamanship or something, like you said, more nefarious.
Lorraine Clifford Lee, I mean, we're looking to the government for leadership on this. What are you going to do?
Well, I think Micheál Martin has shown very strong leadership since taking up the mantle again as Taoiseach, and we have to be realistic about what we can do and what we need to do in cooperation with our European partners, and being part of that conversation is the first step. But Sinead is very correct in saying that we need to know what's happening on our shores, around our shores. We need to be prepared for attacks on infrastructure. We need to inform the public what we need to do in terms of protecting ourselves. I know other countries such as Sweden has advised people to keep a small amount of cash in their house, enough to buy groceries or to fill their car with petrol, or to pay for public transport should our internet go down for a period of time, because we all use electronic means for paying for things. So simple things like that, we need to start that conversation. We are in a much different space, and we need to be very realistic about the threat that's on our doorstep and how we work with our European partners. And of course, neutrality is the position we've had. We need to be flexible in terms of our spending, but in terms of working with our European partners to maintain our neutrality, but protecting this country and the infrastructure.
But other than an allocation of money, I mean, we actually in reality only have one operational ship, as I understand it, at the moment. Like, what is the plan?
I don't know what the plan is, but I think the government are working on a plan, and the landscape has changed rapidly in the past number of weeks even. So it's not any failing on the government's behalf that they haven't yet published the plan. I know they're working on it. But protecting our infrastructure goes beyond just the physical ships in the sea. We have to look at strengthening our IT systems right across our public
cyber
service.
Security.
Our cyber security. We saw a number of years ago the disruption to the health service from one attack. That could increase in scale and increase in frequency over the next number of years. So I think we need to be able to respond quicker to that. But be realistic, we need to invest in our security. And I think that conversation, luckily we haven't had to have it up until now, but I think we need to have it urgently.
Jennifer Whitmore of the Social Democrats. It seems to me that, you know, the opposition situation is change the triple lock, no way. Anything is an attack on the sacred cow of our military neutrality. Any new thinking in the Soc Dems?
So actually we're bringing a motion to the floor of the Dáil next week in relation to the triple lock, because there hasn't been any discussion on it. I mean, even Micheál Martin said the triple lock and how it was constituted was fundamental to Ireland's neutrality, you know, when Fine Gael were trying to change it a few years ago. And he has since done a complete U-turn on it. Now, I know there's a different, you know, things have changed internationally and we are in a different space, but there hasn't been a public discussion on it. So what Social Democrats are calling for is a public vote on the triple lock.
A referendum?
No, a public vote. And the reason we went with a public vote, it can
What's
be done
difference?
A lot quicker. Well, a plebiscite, it won't involve the same time frame. It can be something that can be done a lot quicker than holding a referendum, I would imagine. Government
but
would
is
be quite,
this, is
quite
this?
Against holding any referendum.
Jennifer, in is this an ask the audience
anyway.
Question? Insofar as you know how emotive that'll get, it comes down to the triple lock, to a net issue. You need government approval, Dáil approval and UN Security Council. Now, this is just in the context of not defending. This is just for peacekeeping missions and so on. Now, we all know the five permanent member states, including Russia, America, just as bad. They have a permanent veto. So actually, there aren't many UN agreed peacekeeping missions. And there might be things that we'd like to, be it Ukraine or whatever, have a peace enforcement role. Is it not just common sense?
So I think, look, it's there's clearly challenges and problems with it. But it's not about just throwing the triple lock out and moving from a multilateral system to a unilateral system, which is exactly what would happen. I mean, ultimately, you know, you have three locks. One is the UN and the other two is the government.
What are you proposing?
Well,
like
we're proposing
Ivan has outlined
to reform
that the United States
well,
and
firstly,
Russia
we're
are
proposing,
vetoing
firstly,
everything.
Firstly, we're proposing to actually to talk to the people about it and actually put all those arguments out there, because Micheál Martin himself, your leader, said that the triple lock and having the UN mandate. Yeah.
The world has changed dramatically since that. And I think you're being disingenuous by saying that.
I'm not
You know that the world has changed with the United States.
These are actually his words. It's not being disingenuous.
Quinn,
I'm repeating back to you.
What year was this?
It was a number of years ago. I am repeating back to you exactly what your leader said in the Dáil Éireann Gael tried to bring this in. It absolutely
has. Russia has invaded.
If you both think at the same time, nobody can bear it. Okay, just finish up your point and I want to come on to Gabby.
So, look, I mean, the UN mandate is really, really important in this. Now, there are clearly problems with it, but you can reform it from within. It doesn't mean throwing it out. And we need thanks, Lorraine. We need to continue to have a multilateral approach to our international affairs, because if we move to a unilateral system, we're essentially doing what, you know, Trump is doing in his isolationist approach to American...
Okay, Gabby, I want to come on to another defence issue, which is if you look at what's happening in Ukraine or even Kursk, it seems to be drones is the new form of attack. And the question I'm asking you is, if there was a drone attack on Ireland, the reality is that we're depending on the RAF, the Royal Air Force, to defend us. Now, we do have a memorandum of understanding. We don't even have a full radar system. Like, is it not a bit Dad's army?
I think this is exactly what the issue is. And the issue is that Ireland doesn't actually understand what the risks to it are. It's looking at what's happening in the continent. It's very scared by what's happening in Ukraine. Obviously, you look at the horrors in the Middle East. But Ireland doesn't really understand what are the actual security risks that it's facing. So we had the cyber attack a couple of years ago. I mean, that was really quite devastating to our health service, of course. But even as if you look at the arguments Jennifer's laying out there, you know, she's saying put it to public vote so that we can have the conversation. I don't think people understand. They see Ireland is a neutral country and they say, well, sure, who's going to invade us? Like, is Russia going to come on to our shores and invade us? Like, what is it that we're actually talking about? The government this week signed off on this new National Security Council. It's going to have ministers in it, Gardaí, Defence Forces, senior officials that I think will try and maybe look at some of the risks that are posed to Ireland. I'm originally from Lithuania. I was there 2 weeks ago and I spent the week there with my parents. And I will say, all of the media, the journalists, all the airwaves are full of war talk. Mm. And they are terrified that Putin is going to come in to
Lithuanian
shores.
And is Lithuania in the line of fire?
Lithuania, of course, is a member of NATO. So you would think that that is its ultimate security blanket. But they don't think that. They might think, well, NATO might abandon us. Mm. So if you can imagine the fear that the Baltic countries have, some of the Balkan countries, and then Ireland is kind of, you know, on the very outside and it's looking in from afar. And maybe there is a risk. You know, if you look at what Michael McGrath, our EU commissioner, said, there might be Russian tanks coming into an EU country. I mean, the prospect of that is absolutely terrifying.
All right, lots of texts on this. Ridiculous. We stay neutral and stop fraternising with warmongers in Europe. Peace, not war. And we would never be able to protect against larger countries if they wanted to. So let's just accept that. We need to be investing in drones along our coastal areas. We should establish an industry here that could build these. Best way to patrol our coastlines en masse. Is it about time we ended our ridiculous triple lock system, says one, which effectively gives Putin, Russia, a veto over Irish UN peacekeeping, whereas another says Micheál Martin is a NATO fan and he's sliding us towards this. So do we get beyond first base of kind of the emotion of
this?
You
get the flavour of that. Yeah. It's so emotional. It's so divisive. And also you can understand the emotion. I'm actually reading the Pope's memoirs at the moment and he's very politically interesting, but he talks basically from page one about when we talk about defence and security, we're actually talking about armaments a lot and we're talking about fueling an armaments industry to create weapons in rich countries, to enrich rich countries, to create war in poor countries and to kill poor people. He says it, I think, on page 5 in the book. And I think that's why people are emotional about it, because that's actually what happens in the that's what happens in the end. But Gabby's right, like there's countries in the Baltics who are genuinely terrified. So trying to get that's emotion as well. So trying to get anywhere in this conversation without emotion is impossible because you're talking about people's lives.
Under Article 42.7 of the treaties of Europe, which is it's effectively, we are obliged to defend if a member state, leave aside NATO, if another member state is attacked, that we've already signed up to that to defend them.
we're acting as a bloc, and that's our strength, and what has been protecting us has been that we've been within the bloc. But we wouldn't be under or in any way able to protect another country.
We just have to give money. Would that be it?
Well, I suppose, like, my own father was a peacekeeper with the UN abroad, and we have a very proud tradition of peacekeeping in this country. We're unable to take part in any peacekeeping missions, and the world has changed dramatically. And I would hope that we would have permanent peace in Gaza, permanent peace in Ukraine, and I would hope Irish peacekeepers could be deployed. But I don't see a position at the moment where they could be deployed.
Okay.
If we maintain the current position. So do we discontinue our proud tradition of supporting countries rebuild?
Okay, after the break, we're going to continue on the Friday Forum with the front page story in the Irish Times today that the ESRI has done an assessment of the impact of Trump's tariffs. And it's not good.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Aviva.ie.
This.
Our Friday forum today is Jennifer, Deputy Jennifer Whitmore of the Social Democrats, Senator Lorraine Clifford Lee of Fianna Fáil, and all knowing when it comes to political analysis, Sinead Carroll, editor of the Journal.ie, and Gabby Getachewicz of the Irish Independent. Gabby, I want to start with you with this story in relation to the ESRI assessment of tariffs. So we're looking at the prospect, 25% tariff on the 2nd of April. Even a simple thing like the tariffs on alcohol, which he was proposing 200%, even at 100%, a bottle of Baileys or Jameson would go from $50 to $100. End of story. Damage here estimated at $18 billion. A decline in GDP over 7 years of nearly 4%. It's pretty grim.
Yeah, it's bad news. There's no way of painting it in any other light. If Ireland, among other EU countries, was to be hit with these phenomenal tariffs that Donald Trump is floating, it would be not good for the economy, to say the least. And that's why we had those soundings from, for example, the Irish Whiskey Association last week, when this, you know, 200% figure emerged on alcohol, saying it would potentially be devastating. The chair of the IDA saying it would be awful as well for the alcohol industry. And so when you look at Micheál Martin's meeting in the Oval Office, perhaps everything went well, but did it really? Because the day after, Donald Trump came out with these 200% tariffs. And so there have been exceptions made in the past, I think, on Irish alcohol, even though blanket tariffs were imposed, there was an exception made. So certainly the arms of government now will be hoping that they can use their diplomatic leverages to try and schmooze the Trump administration to give exceptions to Irish products. And if you look at what Trump said in the Oval Office last week, he's saying, I don't want to hurt Ireland. I don't want to pull all of the companies out of Ireland. But, you know, he did give... these backhanded compliments, really kind of saying that the regime that you have in place right now, you know, you have taken advantage of the US. I would have never allowed it, but you were right to do it and I would have done the same. So look, there's no way of painting it any other way. Now, I will say there's been a lot of threats from the EU as well as Trump, and nothing has actually really happened yet. And I think that's what the heads in Brussels will be hoping for, is that this trade war, even though there's lots of threats of it, doesn't actually transpire.
Jennifer, the significance of US corporations here, from your Pfizer, PharmaOne's, MSD, GSK, and then the tech giants, it's 300,000 jobs and it's $28 billion of corporation tax. What should the government be doing? Is it relying on the EU?
Look, we are hugely vulnerable, and this case has been made for years to you know, previous governments that actually relying so significantly on a small number of international corporations was a huge risk to us. And I think we're now seeing the result of that. I think we obviously have to work with the EU on this. We are a member state, and trade is an EU competency. So we do have to work very closely and make sure that we get across our message and defend Ireland in those negotiations. But I do also think that the government needs to now put a, you know, plan in place, make sure that there's supports for, you know, if the tariffs are actually applied. that we can support different industries as much as possible. I think we need to look longer term to ensure that we have a much more robust economy, one that can withstand any of these kind of global shocks. And again, I do think, you know, there was failings in government in not doing that over many years. But, you know, at the moment, like, Donald Trump is very much, when it comes to these issues, he sort of, he negotiates as you would in a business deal. You know, he throws out the most extreme version, and I think hopes that he'll get somewhere in the middle. And you know, that seems to be the approach that he's taking, and the EU are responding. I mean, ultimately, this is a ridiculous tariff war, like trade war. And it is mutually destructive if it continues mm-hmm. apace. So what we need are cool heads. We need negotiations. And I think, you know, whilst all that's happening with Europe, we also need within our own government to, for them to really double down on diplomatic efforts with the US. I mean, Donald Trump was really, really aware of the huge Irish-American vote that he had. And that will play a part in his thinking as well. So I do think that we actually need to make sure that those diplomatic efforts are you know, really focused on, that we're connecting with our diaspora and talking to them about the damage that this could actually cause to Ireland if they were to go ahead.
Earlier in the week, we had PwC on the programme because they've been working with some of the pharma companies in terms of scenario planning. Here's what their partner said.
This noise, these threats, and even the imposition of these tariffs are making companies very nervous. We've seen the Trump administration with the American Trade First policy talk about the trade imbalance that exists between the US and third countries.
Lorraine, what's your message to the 50,000 people who are working in Irish pharma industries from US companies?
Well, I think we need to take a step back and look at this. Donald Trump has changed his mind on tariffs. There is no certainty there. You have to look at what's happening in the bond market. They're at significant risk there as a country. The impact on Tesla stock as well. He could change his mind on this, but we need to prepare. And as Jennifer said, use every diplomatic channel we can. And we have, over the years, built up a very good diplomatic corps in the United States. We need to further invest in that over the next couple of months to withstand anything. But there, you know, there is a significant risk there. We have been getting windfall tax receipts in recent years. Michael McGrath set up two specific funds to channel these windfall tax receipts into. That fund now is there to protect industries. We need to protect our indigenous food sector, which is so important to this country, but also our pharma sector needs to be protected. But the reality is, these companies have invested huge amounts of money into this country. They're not overnight going to withdraw all of that funding and abandon it for an extremely volatile administration in the United States. So we need to look at that. But there is a significant risk in the short term to revenues and to jobs. So we need to have a good plan in place and look at the drawing down on those funds that were established to protect those jobs.
The
ERSI did say in their report this morning that the protectionist policies may prompt multinationals. So we do have to, I think, scenario plan for it being that destructive, because while Donald Trump changes his mind, he does think he's right on this issue. Mm. Like this, like, he's talked about tariffs in his first term, but this term he's more certain of himself. He's more certain that he's right about a lot of things. He's not listening to as many people around him. There's fewer people around him who are contrarian to his thoughts and his policies. So I do think we have to scenario plan for these things actually being followed through on by Trump, because he has followed through on a lot of what he has said. Since November, he has followed through already, and it's only March. I think you're right about the Irish-American, but because we're in the EU, that there's very little that, you know, they can do to just target to target the EU and not Ireland. So while I think the Irish-Americans are important there, it's probably not going to take precedence over how much he hates the EU.
It's kind of hard to see, though, these big multinational companies that have been set up here for years suddenly saying, you know what, Trump said this, so away we go, up and leave. You know, speaking to some of the people on the US business side when I was in DC last week, they're saying, look, that would take at least 10 years. Mm. And it's not just the fact that, you know, Ireland is in the EU. It's the fact that it's an English speaking country. It's got a highly educated workforce. All of these things still work in its favour. So even if perhaps, you know, tariffs become an issue or corporation taxes, I think it's more so forward looking. So perhaps
new investment.
Perhaps it's more so we might see if there is damage from the Trump administration, we may actually see it play out in a number of years and not immediately.
OK, so the country faces these economic threats, these security threats, and then we look at the DAW. And Jennifer, I want to come to you because, you know, for months now, we have this situation that the regional independent group, independents who are not ministers, want to have a technical group whereby they have rights for priority questions, leaders' questions, so on. The government, the opposition saying in a united voice, you can't be in government and in opposition. The government have voted it through at the Dáil Business Committee. Where are we now? Because this was kicked into touch for the Paddy's weekend. Are we moving to D-Day on this?
We are, unfortunately. It seems that the government are actually going to push this through on Tuesday. They've made changes to the standing orders whereby, you know, Michael Lowry and his team will have speaking rights in opposition, which is completely contrary to
There's no watering down of this.
No. And so, but we're not even having a debate on it. And my understanding is this is the first time in the history of the state that the government is going to push through a motion without debate. Without a vote or for a vote without any debate, and the opposition is obviously calling for a debate.
And they're going to win that vote. So then what happens?
Well, we'll just have to wait and see. I think there is solutions to this. I mean, there can be, you know, what the government should do is just give that grouping time from the government's speaking time. I mean, that is the solution to this. And you know, when we
no, but they're not minded to do that.
They're not.
But like, I've been in 20 plus years in the Dáil. So your opposition is, your opportunities are, you're not going to win the vote, that you walk out, you continue to boycott committees. Let's call that the nuclear option. Are you saying that the collective opposition is minded to give out but suck it up, or
no, I think
to go
we'll be,
for the nuclear
I
option?
I think we'll be standing strong. I'm not going to preempt what's going to happen, and we haven't had, I mean, we only found out last night that this was going to be pushed through. So those discussions are ongoing. But I mean, as you said, the opposition is united in this. It's across the entire spectrum of the opposition. And the fact that the government made an absolute firm commitment at the start of this process that they would come out with a solution that would be acceptable to both government and opposition, and they completely rolled back on that. So you just, you know, they've completely ignored that commitment that they made. They're going to push this through. And what I just cannot understand, I think what the public can't understand, is why the government is just bending over backwards to facilitate Michael Lowry. I mean, it's
okay.
Just incredible.
Lorraine, we'll put that
what
to
the
Lorraine.
Public can't understand is why the opposition won't allow 8 extra minutes a week speaking time. Why the opposition is fixated in taking time from opposition.
If you can
let
me.
We're just here for Lorraine. I'll let you back in.
Look, you're trotting out the Sinn Féin speaking points, and I know you're all uniting under that.
No,
but it's ridiculous. It's expanding 8 minutes a week extra time for. No, hang on a second. And actually, the Dáil evolves over time, right? And what we're doing is giving backbench TDs from Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael extra time. Now, I'm not a TD, but I know since 2016, since my participation in the parliamentary party, but actually since 2020, since we were in government, my colleagues have been saying they haven't had the opportunity to speak. So it's giving them extra
That's
time as well.
That's absolute rubbish.
So,
that is just not true.
No,
government
actually,
backbenchers get
can,
time
if,
to speak. They get as much.
Yeah.
They come in on statements. They have
yeah.
questions in the Dáil. They have.
Okay,
they can take
just
QPLs.
Okay.
There's
speaking.
Lots of time for
okay.
them to
can
talk.
Can I just continue
what
speaking?
We can't have a situation where.
No,
we can't have a situation where you're in government and you're actually in opposition. And that does not make sense. You're undermining democracy here.
Okay, what we can't have is a situation where ministers now won't be able to travel abroad if the opposition withdraws pairing arrangements. We've just spent the whole show talking about the very grave international context that this country is facing. The international threats. We need our ministers and our Taoiseach an Taoiseach to be able to travel abroad, to engage with our European partners, to go to the United States, to protect the interests of this country. And the opposition are
okay.
acting
well,
like...
Well, now I'm going to call in the jury here of Sinead and Gabby because the arguments are well rehearsed. You know, giving government backbenchers essentially opposition rights, priority questions. Conversely, we've a new Dáil, it's more complex, we need new arrangements. Who's in the, you know, put it like this, the government might is right, but there might be consequences. What do you think is the fair and just outcome, Sinead?
I think if you are a government TD, you shouldn't have opposition speaking time, and you can mess around with what you call it, but it's still on a ratio, it's still adding to opposition time and then taking from that because you're a government TD. But on the other side of it, it's absolutely ridiculous how far into this term we are and no work has been done. Mm-hmm. That
and
no committees for four months.
But that could have happened though. So, I mean, the government is now changing standing orders. They could have changed standing orders, like they could say change that in 9 months' time. We could have set up the committees. We could have done all that. They could have come up with a solution.
But I thought you were boycotting the committees.
Well, no, the Oireachtas, so the, Verona Murphy, like this, the she made a ruling on it. And we're perfectly happy with that because she said that they couldn't talk from opposition time. So that's absolutely fine. So it's the government that have the ability fix this.
So you say on principle the opposition is right, but in practice they're wrong because they're obstructing them.
Well, in practice, we just need to get
you
to work.
You should go into politics.
But it should be up to the government to come up with a solution that isn't adding and then taking away from the last word on this.
I think, in fairness, it's very clear.
Put your black cap on and give a verdict.
The fact that key legislation is not being passed by TDs who were elected by the people last November to do the jobs that they're paid a load of money every year to do is a disgrace. And I also will say that the opposition stood on the Leinster House plinth and they gave out about how there was a vote and how they lost the vote and how that's undemocratic amongst TDs. That literally goes against the very tenets of democracy. The government have the majority in this. If they're to ram through votes, then that's just democracy,
so suck
baby.
Suck it up. Okay. Our time is unfortunately, my producer is in my ear to have finished long time. My sincere thanks to Gabby, you just heard, their political correspondent, the Irish Independent, Jennifer Whitmore, Sock Dem TD, Senator Lorraine Clifford Leave of Fianna Fáil, and Sinead Carroll of thejournal.ie.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.